on radio, on YouTube, streaming live on investtalk.com, and for our podcast subscribers. This is Invest Talk. Independent thinking, shared success. Invest Talk is made possible by KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm serving clients throughout the United States. Here is KPP Financial Portfolio Manager, Luke Guerrero.
Good afternoon, fellow investors, and welcome back to Invest Talk. My name is Luke Guerrero, and it is Thursday, November 7th, 2024. And today is just like any other day, and by that I mean markets are digesting information. All around us, especially now, we are seeing economics changes, political challenges, policy, a new policy direction on the horizon. And so it's easy to get inundated with all this information and feel lost. And that is why the objective for this podcast, this radio program, is to help you become a better, more informed investor. In order to do that, we bring you some stories of the day, some stories of the week, some trends that we are seeing that help inform our own decisions for our clients at KPP. And we go over that material and the actionable items and hope to give you some advice on how to improve your discipline, your decision-making, your mindset, your framework, in order to help you achieve those goals you set for yourself. But most importantly, we like to hear from you through your voicemails, your comments, your live calls, 5 days a week, because we want to know what you want to know. We want to know what you are concerned with. We want to know what is on your mind. Now, in just a bit, we'll talk about today's market performance and run down the show topics. But let's tackle this caller question now.
Dave from Ohio. Let me just get your opinion on U.S. Bancorp, USB. Is this a good time to get in? Be waiting for your answer. Thank you.
So U.S. Bancorp is not the company you see here on the screen. That is a different company. But U.S. Bancorp is a, well, you guessed it, bank company. They provide private banking, commercial banking, investment, mortgage, trust, payment services. It's a bank. And over the past year, it's about 42%, though down 3% today. If you look at this track record, it's underperformed the S&P for a while. And not only underperformed the S&P, it's underperformed the industry as a whole pretty consistently. Now, recently, earnings were pretty solid. They raised their dividend, right? They averaged about a 2 to 3% dividend before the pandemic. Now projected to be about 4% dividend yield this year. Their dividends per share has grown from $1.34 to $1.98, all while maintaining relatively the same amount of shares outstanding. They have a lot of debt on their balance sheet, about $78 billion in debt on a $79 billion bank, but they're pretty well capitalized, right? That's what has allowed them to raise that dividend. Their payout ratio is only about 58% right now. So it seems to me to be a rather safe dividend. Let's look at their net interest income growth, about 6% over the past 5 years, pretty solid, and a lot of growth over the past 4 years coming out of the pandemic, about $12 billion in net interest income, projected to be about $16.2 billion this year. And so with all that in mind, is it trading at a attractive valuation? Honestly, it looks fine to me. It looks pretty fairly valued. It's price book about 1.5, though. That is on the expensive end of where you'd expect banks to be. They typically range from about 1 to 1.2 in terms of their asset value. Here's the thing. There is a decent amount of growth in interest income. Look at this. From 2022, it's about $17 billion, about $30 billion in 2023. Now, interest expense certainly grew as well as rates increased. But still, that's some pretty solid growth in interest income. Their cash flow, also very solid growth coming out of the pandemic. From a technical perspective, it looks fine. You saw a big jump yesterday, along with a lot of the industry as well. And so I think it'll probably do maybe average relative to other banks going forward. Again, it's well capitalized. The growth looks pretty solid. Their outlook is about 9 to 12% annual over the next year. Annualized earnings per share growth over the next year. And so you see that coming out of the $3.27 per share last year into $3.84, projected again to be about $4.30 next year. Consistent growth, capitalized just fine. I think it's fine bank if you're looking to get some bank exposure. Doesn't have wild blow me out of the water growth. Seems to be relatively fairly valued at 12 times forward looking priced earnings. So if you're looking for a solid dividend payer, got a lot of room to maintain that dividend, grow that dividend. They've done that consistently. I think US Bancorp is perfectly fine. That is US Bancorp, ticker USB. We got a lot of ground to cover in the next 45 minutes. And so here's a little bit of what we have planned for you, time permitting. My main focus point concerns this topic. Treasury yields skyrocket. Is the Fed's rate cut party over? The unexpected surge in Treasury yields is signaling a potential shift in market expectations for future interest rate cuts. So we'll dive into that. And really, there's a theme about not just the Fed, but interest rates in this episode, because we'll dive into the 30-year fixed mortgage rate and how it has reached a four-month high, even though rates are cut. Why is that? We'll talk about it. We'll also touch on India, which is undergoing pretty astonishing change within its stock market structure, making it more open to more investors. So what does that mean for us? What does that mean for Indian citizens? We'll dive into that. And lastly, should we have time at the end of the show, the Fed cut rates today. There were some other announcements as well. What does that mean for the job market? What does that mean for economic growth moving forward? We also have some voice bank questions ready to play, including one on tariffs and one on Lennox International Inc. That's ticker LII. As well as some questions that came in from the comment section of the InvestTalk YouTube channel. And of course, we welcome your finance and investment questions now or anytime throughout the show. Now we're going into a break. On the other side, we'll talk about today's market activity. By the way, we did it, or really, you did it. We hit the 60 million download mark last night. So thank you from the bottom of mine and Justin's hearts. Please remember, you can call us anytime and leave your questions on the InvestTalk voice bank, 888-99-CHART.
InvestTalk is made better when listeners add their voices.
This is Nick from Seattle.
Hey, this is Steve out of Charleston, South Carolina.
Could you comment on Barrick Gold, G-O-L-D?
And Justin Klein and Luke Guerrero are always ready to provide unbiased answers.
Be patient. Don't rush into anything. Understand what you own.
I would probably trim here, but I don't see any reason why you'd want to sell out of it.
Voice bank calls are very important. But so are the spontaneous questions that come in during the InvestTalk live stream.
Let's pivot over to a live call. We love those.
Looks like we got our first live call. I love live calls. Let's
go. If you've never called, what are you waiting for?
Let's go take another live call.
Tell your friends, live a little, live a little.
Looks like we got a live call.
Call InvestTalk weekdays from 4 to 5 p.m. Pacific time.
That makes sense?
Yeah, it sure does. I appreciate the advice.
888-99-CHART. The numbers are in. InvestTalk, now with more than 60 million downloads. Justin Klein and Luke Guerrero are ready to answer your finance and investment questions 24/7. InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
Looks like we got our first live call of the day. Omar from Chicago, how can we help you?
Yeah, hi. Thanks for taking my call. Question is about UI. What are your thoughts about this company? And do you think it's a good time to get into it or should I wait?
Let's take a look. Well, UI is Ubiquity Inc. It is a telecommunications company. What they do is they sell equipment and provisions related to software platforms. It has really, it operates across the globe. It got 48% of its revenue comes from the United States, about 38% from Europe and the Middle East, 7% from Asia Pacific. I would say it's diversified in a way that we like. It's between two different business segments, its service provider tech and its enterprise technology. Now, taking a look at its growth, looks pretty solid, about 10% growth on an annualized basis over the past 5 years, and it's pretty symmetric in terms of its growth profile until about last year, right? It grew from, it actually fell from 1.9 billion to, 1.94 billion to 1.928 billion last year. And in that time, its margins fell as well. It reached a peak in 2021 of 32%, projected to be about 18% this year. Now, in terms of debt, they don't have much debt at all. It's about $757 million debt on a $15.24 billion market cap company. They're buying back shares. We like that. They have a dividend yield, about 95 basis points. And their cash flow is improving. So all of this looks good to me so far. Looking at their chart, technically, it looks pretty solid, right? Over the past year, they're up about 138%. But my inclination is to believe, based on their short interest that they got right now of nearly 7.5% short interest, that it may be a little bit overvalued right now after this run-up, right? It's up 138% over the past year, up 87% year to date. And that's coming off of the back of having negative cash flow last year, positive cash flow once again this year. Its margins look pretty fine to me, but again, it's more about, or it's not just about, rather, investing in good businesses. It's about good businesses at fair prices. And so looking at this, right, the average broker rating is about a 172 in terms of its target price. And that's not the be-all end-all of where we should be considering holding securities for the long term, right? It's based on different estimates that change over time. It's not always updated and what have you. But this run-up has been pretty significant, and it's been pretty strong relative to the market for, well, looks like it's going on 5 years. And so it looks like a pretty solid business. Again, fundamentally, it looks like a solid business. They have pretty much no debt at all. Their cash flow is trending positive for the first time in 3 years. The profitability is improving pretty dramatically from last year. All things that we like, they're buying back shares. But it's currently trading at about a 28 times forward-looking cash flow. It's a little expensive, about 30.8 times forward-looking price to earnings, well over its five-year average, about 10% over its five-year average. So I would keep it on my watch list for now. It's had quite the run. Again, you know, with a lot of the market activity over the past couple of days, it's trying to digest a different policy. And so I would hold off for now, keep it on my watch list. It's had a heck of a run, and it looks like it's ripe for a pullback. Thanks for the call. Let's shift gears, talk about the market today. The U.S. stocks were mostly higher. Stocks ending, though, a bit off of best levels, that is. S&P and NASDAQ still both set fresh record closes, the 49th of the year for the S&P. Dow was flat, S&P up 74 basis points, NASDAQ up 151 basis points, Russell 2 down 43 basis points, probably due to what's been happening with bond yields, though we'll get into that later. The mixed session came after, of course, a big Wednesday rally that saw the S&P put up its best post-election performance on record at more than 2.5%. Outperformers included semis, tech hardware, apparel, home improvement, home builders, cosmetics doing well. Underperformers, looks like energy, banks, credit cards, asset managers, all under relative underperformers on the day. Gold ended up 1.1% after its big sell-off yesterday. Crude oil settled up 0.9%, though off of the best levels of the day. Big news, FOMC announcement, the big story of the day. Fed opting for a 25 basis point cut, though the takeaway is really fairly limited given uncertainty around how Fed policy moving forward may intersect with Trump administration policy. Though important to note, Chair Powell was asked if he would resign should President-elect Trump ask him to when he takes office. He did say no, and as of now, it is not clear that there is any ability to push somebody out of the Federal Reserve Board, so looks like he is likely to stay on through the end of his term. Path of least resistance still higher on a bunch of factors, right? We got an unwinding of election hedges, reset of volatility, seasonality, favorable buybacks opening back up. We've been talking about that. And also a shift into a focus for Q4 earnings. Expectations pretty high, double-digit growth expectations. Some concerns, though, as well. Global trade disruption from expected tariff ramp-up and potential Trump administration policies. Hotter fiscal makeup, a lot more spending, potential immigration crackdown. All things that could dent the Fed easing cycle that we're seeing right now. Honestly, overall, I would say few material changes on the day rather besides what we talked about. Market currently pricing in a 30% probability of no rate cut at the December meeting. And that's little change from what was being forecasted pre-meeting. Just a bit of economic data on the calendar today. Weekly initial jobless claims were right in line with consensus, though continuing claims topped forecasts and are the highest since November of 2021. Preliminary Q3 productivity growth, just light of consensus, while unit labor costs were higher. Now, moving to a new break, and still to come in this podcast and this radio show, I will tackle more of your voice bank calls and get to our main focus points. Stay with me. Give us a call at 888-99-CHART.
Got a question for Justin or Luke? You're the best person to ask it.
I wanted to pick your brain about Apple. What did you think about their earnings call? Is this a good time to add to my position?
Call InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART. InvestTalk. Tell your friends they can listen live, download the free podcast, or watch InvestTalk on our YouTube channel.
My main focus point today concerns an important question. As Treasury yields skyrocket, is the Fed's rate cut party over? And that's because Treasury yields they're climbing. With 10-year yield, hit 4.33%. Its highest level, one of its highest levels in nearly 3 months. So what is driving this? Why is this happening, right? The Fed is cutting rates. Why are medium and long-term rates still on the rise? Well, the cuts ease pressure, right? It eases pressure in some corners of the market. You're seeing the shorter end of the curve generally fall. But the bigger picture of what drives medium and longer-term rates is expectations about the cost of funding for the government, expectations about where the Fed is going to move rates in the longer term, right, related to inflation or because of the cost of funding in the government. And so what Wall Street is doing is it's dialing back its expectations about where cuts are going to be moving forward for a myriad of reasons. And so the shift has reshaped investor outlook, right? It's pushed up bond yields as markets adjust to this potential for higher than expected interest rates for longer. While the Fed moved pretty decisively in September, which I think they should have, right? You see potential deterioration of the labor market, which is a big problem in terms of how easy it is to fix the demand side of labor versus how easy it is, or rather not easy, but the steps it takes to tame inflation. Right? It can be a self-fulfilling doom cycle if the labor market deteriorates too quickly. And so they moved decisively in September. They slashed the benchmark rate by about 50 basis points. And when that happened, there was this expectation that, okay, the Fed is moving into probably a more drastic rate cut cycle than they're looking at now. They cut 25% today, or 25 basis points today. And looking forward, well, they might not even cut at the end of the year. And this is something that we see. The market expects a certain thing. Remember, at one point, we were supposed to see 7 cuts this year. But the reality is something different. And that's because economic data changes, right? Economic data released since this September meeting shows, well, inflation might be ticking up just a little bit, not in a concerning way, but just a little bit right now. And so there's caution. And they may adopt this more gradual approach because of it. After the cut today, there's like I said, a real likelihood that there will be a skip at the December meeting because we're entering more of a wait-and-see mode, right? We're trying to see where Fed policy needs to align based upon policy prescriptions from a new administration who has proposed policy that would raise the deficit, increase borrowing costs, and therefore also have inflationary pressures, right? So the Fed needs to see what is going to happen moving forward. And so in short, the economy may be gearing up for a slow and steady approach. Not too hot, not too cold, not too fast, not too slow, with markets reacting accordingly. That's why you're seeing this 10-year yield divergence moving higher since September, while the shorter end of the curve is falling. The average person, this could have a lot of ramifications, right? It changes the cost of credit card debt financing, personal loan financing, those stocks you own, their corporate financing of those companies changes, and mortgage financing, something we'll talk a bit about later. So I always say, if you want to know where things are headed. Look to the bond market, and it appears to be that that still remains the case. I hope you've been telling all your friends and family members about our podcast now being available in video form over on the Invest Talk YouTube channel. Just head over to YouTube and search Invest Talk with two T's. And this question from Taylor Mickelson, a loyal viewer, says, REIT space. Initial reactions to the presidential election appears to have hit the REIT space hard, including IPR and AMT. Do you see the election of Trump as a reason to avoid names in this space? I mean, this is a classic trade-off, right? You see, as I mentioned, bond yields rising, the anticipation that the interest rates going forward are going to be higher because of policy, right? Industrial policy, tax policy, things that may lead to a ramp up in inflation, but certainly would increase the borrowing financing cost of the government. And people who invest in the REIT space, what are they generally looking for? They're looking for yield. We saw this as rates were going up. What happened to the REIT space? Well, it didn't do as well because you can get more yield elsewhere. You can get more yield from the bond market. And so these things tend to move relative to each other. That's exactly what we saw. We've seen a little pareback in REITs. So again, you got to understand the dynamics of how asset classes generally move together, what is driving all of them in different directions. That helps you allocate your portfolio accordingly in a more diversified way. Thanks for watching. Now in the next Invest Talk, we'll look into this question, spotting breakout stocks, seven essential strategies for all investors. From analyzing competitive advantage to tracking market trends and monitoring volume patterns, investors can learn to spot the next big winner. That's tomorrow, but for now, I'm Luke Guerrero. I'm ready to take your calls now at 888-99-CHART.
Got a question for Justin or Luke? You're the best person to ask it.
Quick question. What are some signs of that a recession is coming?
Is there any lesson for people who own stocks, even if they don't short a stock, that the stock they own, they should know whether it's been heavily shorted?
InvestTalk is ready 24/7.
If this gets to 170 to 175 in that range, that's where I'd pick it up.
Awesome. Thank you, Justin. I appreciate it.
I'm hoping you'll give me your take on Ormat Technologies, ORA. Curious if you think it'd be better for me to let it go and send money elsewhere.
I'm a new investor, and your podcast has helped me out a lot.
Call InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART, or post your questions on the InvestTalk YouTube channel.
AI might be the most important innovation ever. It's storming every industry, with literally billions being invested. So buckle up. The problem is that AI needs the right data and a lot of speed and processing power. So how do you compete without costs spiraling out of control? Time to upgrade to the next generation of the cloud, Oracle Cloud Infrastructure, or OCI. OCI is a single platform for your infrastructure, database, and application development, with AI embedded across it all. And Oracle Sovereign Cloud helps you address your requirements for location, access, and data residency. OCI provides blazing fast speeds for AI's demanding workloads. And in the cloud, when you pay by the minute, speed matters. And of course, nobody does data better than Oracle. If you want OCI to help you do more and spend less, like Uber, the Premier League, and Oracle Red Bull Racing, take a free test drive at oracle.com/bandwidth. That's oracle.com/bandwidth. oracle.com/bandwidth.
Invest Talk. Your questions are free. The answers are unbiased. Luke Guerrero is here now. 888-99-CHART.
Hey, good afternoon, Justin and Luke. This is Rob calling from Las Vegas. I wanted to see if I could ask your insight and analysis on Lennox International. The stock symbol is LII. I have this as a position in my industrials portion of the portfolio. And it's done pretty well for me over the past year, but it has increased in value, and it now represents about 4.5% of my portfolio. Just wanted to see if there's any future potential with this, future growth, or if I should potentially trim on this, or what your thoughts are. Be looking forward to your answer on the next podcast. Thank you.
So ticker LII, Lennox International. They design, manufacture, market products for heating, ventilation, air conditioning, and refrigeration. And so because they are an industrial company that is manufacturing, given potential trade tensions on the horizon. The question is, well, where are their main suppliers? And it looks like their suppliers are from Europe. Is their number seven supplier? You can see this on my screen right here. It shows the country for various suppliers, customers, partners. Looks like the rest of their supply chain comes from the United States. So that's certainly a green flag for this one. Now, Lennox is up 58% over the past 52 weeks, up 39% over the past year. Its revenue has grown pretty solidly on an annualized basis, about 5.1% over the past 5 years. Its margins look like they're expanding from 9.3% net margin back in 2018, projected to be 14.5% this year. And in that time, their cash flow has looked pretty solid in terms of growth. A little drop off in 2022, that's certainly not a big trend there. Let's look at their balance sheet, about $1.4 billion in debt, and that's paid down from a peak of $1.75 in 2022 on a $21 billion market cap company. Not a lot of short interest. They pay a consistent dividend. In fact, their dividend has grown from $2.43 to $4.44 this year is what it is projected to be. Now, that all sounds great, but looking at this, I think one of the flags that I saw, which again isn't always a you need to sell this flag, is there's been a lot of insider selling, but it's at a record high level, right? You're at a pretty solid valuation here, or sorry, solid price here, and it's just an elevated price, right? Going back to November of last year, it's pretty much a straight up trend. A lot of relative strength. I mean, you can see it here starting in mid-2023, just relative strength above and beyond the S&P 500. And so with this run-up, it's pretty expensive. 26.3 forward-looking price to earnings, almost 30 times its book value. Don't let yourself be muddled down by this range here. I look at the low end there. It's still on the lower end of its book value range over the past 5 years. Price to cash flow, 23 times. Honestly, it looks like a company that has run up a lot, and for good reason, right? It's a low debt business with increasing cash flow, buying back shares. We like that. That's going to keep the stock price elevated as well. But you're at 4.5%, and you said that's a lot, which I imagine that means your target is significantly lower than 4.5%. So it's had quite the run up over the past year. It's at an elevated level. I would start to trim it down now. It's up 3% today. Congratulations on the winner. That is Lennox International, LII. Now, we already talked earlier about treasury yields, so let's talk about something that is affected by treasury yields, particularly that longer end of the curve, and that is mortgage rates. Mortgage rates hit a four-month high this week. The 30-year fixed rate climbed to 6.79%, up from 6.72% just last week, marking a steady six-week rise. This increase is, well, it's partly fueled by the economic uncertainty surrounding what a new administration and their policies will be. Because these proposed policies included potential tax cuts and hefty tariffs on imports, which could in turn raise costs, right? Create price inflation, limit what the Fed can do downward. And because of the considerations there, right? That means the Fed may have to change course. So the longer end of the curve is telling you that, as I mentioned before, rates could be higher in the long run. For the housing market, higher mortgage rates paired with the already elevated housing prices are still making it tough for potential buyers who just a few years ago could get mortgages at 3%. Now, September's sales of previously owned homes hit a 14-year low, and this rate lock is keeping homeowners in their homes. Bright MLS reports that monthly mortgage payments for a $400,000 home has now jumped by almost $200 in just 6 weeks. A lot of that's due to that tight inventory. A lot of it's due to rates climbing. They're continuing to climb on anticipation of additional federal spending that could drive deficits higher. Many buyers who are waiting until the election may find it harder to secure affordable financing going forward. So as treasury yields continue to climb, in spite of the Fed still being in this rate cutting cycle, you have to understand the difference between how the Fed cuts move the shorter end and how the longer end tells you what long-term financing will be. So mortgage rates are likely to remain elevated for quite some time, creating additional hurdles in an already challenging housing market. This is Invest Talk. Let's put it back to your questions from 888-99-CHART.
Hey, guys. I was trying to reach out. I got a question, not exactly political, but it's kind of about tariffs. You know, I understand that when Trump placed tariffs, didn't the Biden administration kind of leave that intact? So I'm curious, are we concerned about more tariffs? I mean, trying to interrupt the market, possibly causing more inflation? And also, do you find that when we did have those tariffs in the past, do you think that that added to our inflation when we first started doing it? Because I always known that, you know, our government's always advised, you know, tariffs are just bad, 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 don't do it. So looking for your feedback. Thanks.
Yeah. So I think you have to take a step back and realize not all tariffs are the same, right? The tariffs that were put in place and maintained in the first Trump administration through the Biden administration fall under the category of tariffs that I think I and most economists, most people within this industry would agree with, right? Tariffs are distortions of the market. They just are. They're putting some sort of constraint on what would otherwise be free trade. And so in order to distort this market, you should probably have a pretty good reason. And the reason for those tariffs was, well, national security reasons, right? What the purpose was for those is they were targeted tariffs to generally support the solar industry within the United States. There was a concern that China, having a lot of cheap, more advanced solar panels, electric vehicles, could flood the U.S. market and completely drown U.S. industries. And so that is in and of itself a national security concern. Now, yeah, you do take a little bit of inflation there, but sometimes it's give and take. There's cost and benefits. And so the tariffs that are being proposed, and we don't know what they'll be, but there was talk about a blanket tariff, right? That's different. Targeted tariffs are one thing, blanket tariffs are different. And so if you're putting a tariff on all imported goods, which was the campaign proposal, we don't know if that's what it'll end up being, but that's what we're talking about here. If you put a tariff on all goods, right? Say it costs me $10 to make a pair of shoes, I'm selling it for $20. If it costs me $15 now to buy those input goods to make those shoes, I'm not still going to charge $20, right? The consumer is the one who eventually pays that. That's what happens with not just tariffs, but any general distortion of the market. That's just common sense economics. And so, yes, tariffs are, though not a driver of what people consider to be inflation, as in supply chain pressures, cost, you know, cost pull, demand push inflation, but they still do make costs higher and tampen down overall consumer demand levels. And that's why most economists are like, oh, well, unless you have a really good reason, you shouldn't put on tariffs. Who knows? We'll see what the policy is going to be as we get more evidence of who's going to be put in place within his cabinet, and he draws more policy that is defined. We'll certainly see what is to come. But yes, to answer your question, blanket tariffs, especially on any imports, blanket tariffs tend to be inflationary. So there is a little bit of a concern there. Let's play two in a row. This one from 888-99-CHART.
I have a quick question on a stock I've been following, and I'm considering buying it and adding it to my portfolio. Wondering what your thoughts are on it. I believe the ticker symbol is TSCO, Tractor Supply Company. It seems to be a top company in its field. I know it would be nice if it came down in price, but I don't know if that'll be happening anytime. So I was wondering if this might be a decent price to pick it up at right where it is right now. Thank you for everything. I look forward to hearing your thoughts on the show. Have a good day.
So Tractor Supply Company is a retailer of more of like the rural lifestyle sector. So they cater to farmers, pet owners with non-discretionary goods. So although it's called Tractor Supply Company, they sell more than tractors. Now, year to date, it is up about 34.53%, doing pretty well, about 45% over the past 52 weeks. And its revenue growth is stellar, about 13% on an annualized basis over the past 5 years. Now, recently, I think they announced there was going to be an acquisition, if I'm not mistaken, of a different online pet company, online pet retailer. Olivet, in an all-cash deal. And so that's probably helped the price be elevated as well. Now, take a look at their margins. Retailer margins are tough, right? Generally, you're going to see grocery margins around 3 to 4%. More specialized retailers, maybe up towards, you know, 8, 9%. In this situation, it looks like our net margin is hanging out around 7.5%, about 7.6, projected to be 7.4 this year. Let's take a look at their relative valuation. Trading at 26.3 times forward-looking earnings, that is certainly expensive. Trade about 13.5 book value, price to book value, about 23 on 0.9 on cash flow. Those are all well above their 5-year averages. Now, Q2 earnings, they showed some solid increases on net sales. Their balance sheet is pretty healthy, about $6.3 billion in debt on a $31 billion market cap company, and their cash flow looks to be improving pretty solidly. They've also been buying back shares, dividend yield about 1.52%. I mean, look at this relative strength going back to the beginning of 2020. That's pretty strong, with the exception of last year where they underperformed the industry by about 21%. It's been pretty solid, and that is relative to its peers. It's about on track to perform just like its peers this year. Still pretty solid. You know, I think for me, it's just still too elevated of a valuation here. It's a good company. It's certainly a good company. It's fundamentally strong. It's cash flows in the right direction. The short interest is telling you something about 6%, right? That's not short squeeze levels. That would be in like the 20% range, but that is the market telling you that a lot of people think this is overvalued, albeit not crazily overvalued. And it is, again, a good company that is expanding, but they're about to throw off a lot of cash for this acquisition. It's good. They're not financing it through debt. I don't believe they are. They have a lot of cash on hand, right? Their free cash flow looks pretty solid. They got about $400 million in cash. And so maybe they finance it with a little debt. But either way, this is another story to me of a good company at a pretty high valuation. So I keep it on my watch list for now. Hopefully it pulls back soon. Thanks for the call. Let's shift gears back to our InvestTalk YouTube channel question bank and answer this question on Moeller Industries. Moeller Industries is a global industrial company, right? They sell products made from copper, aluminum, brass, steel, and plastics. And the ticker is MLI. It's probably Mueller, either way. It's exactly the company I mentioned. So taking a look at this company, they are a relatively mid-ish cap company, about $10 billion. Their revenue growth, about 6% on an annualized basis. Pretty solid for an industrial company. Net margins looking pretty solid, about 17% last year, up from 4.2%. A couple years ago. Very, very solid. And so I think that one thing that is striking to me about this is they have pretty much no debt at all whatsoever. $33 million on that $10 billion market cap. Their cash flow is improving. Their profitability looks pretty solid. Right? They really haven't had any debt since 2020 before the pandemic. In the pandemic, and they used that time to pay it down. From 2021, they paid down about $300 million in debt going into 2021. And so they have a lot of room. They have a lot of room to run. Their payout ratio right now is 11% on an 84 basis point dividend yield. Has their dividend grown a lot? Yeah, tripled. It's tripled in the past 5 years. So I think this looks like a company that is pretty solid fundamentally. Balance sheet looks great. So let's take a look at their relative valuation. Trade about 4x book. It's its upper end. Trading probably about its normalized upper end of its forward-looking price to earnings. Price to sales about 3x, also at a 5-year high. Another story it looks like of a company that is fundamentally sound. Its balance sheet looks good. Its growth looks good, though its margins are trimming down a little bit, or rather its return on assets equity trimming down a little bit since 2022. So again, this is another one I would keep on my watch list. Even though it's down a percent and a half today, it's up 141%. Over the past year, 141%. So either way, Moeller Industries, ticker MLI, keep it on there. But for now, no buy. You know, we talked a lot about rates already. Talked about the treasury yield. We talked about mortgage rates, which honestly, I think is probably the thing in terms of effect of the bond market that most people are seeing. New home buyers, people that are wanting to upsize, people that are wanting to downsize. This is the most visible thing for them. And should we have time at the end of the show, we'll talk about a little bit more in depth at the Fed meeting. But this next talking point is one that I think is interesting because it's more of a guide to how markets are changing outside of the United States in an economy that is attractive, an economy that is growing, an economy that may have newfound prevalence through the rest of this decade. So when we come back from the break, we will start to dive in and you'll find out which country I'm talking about. This is InvestTalk. I'm Luke Graham. We have one goal here. It's to help you achieve your financial freedom. Our work continues after this break, our final break. So get your questions in now at 888-99-CHART.
Luke Guerrero is here and ready to tackle your questions.
I would like to know more about a company which I've been tracking for some time.
Quick question on a very risky play. It is a company that caught my attention because the ROE is like close to 100%.
InvestTalk is ready 24/7.
And I was just wondering, are there any investment accounts with different banks that you would recommend, something that may offer good resources?
Call InvestTalk. 888-99-CHART.
The more you learn about how the market works, the better your chances for success. So don't forget to call InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
Now, before the break, gave you a little tease about a country whose stock market is seeing an unprecedented wave of participation, with 100 million people, many near the poverty line, buying into the market for the first time, and that country is India. Today, 1 in 5 Indian households hold shares, up from 1 in 14 just 5 years ago. That's because a new mutual fund with a minimum investment of, what is US $3, is set to launch soon, and that's a trend of getting cheaper per share mutual funds for more investors, right? This makes it even easier to participate. Digitization and low fees have made it simpler than ever for everybody, everyday Indians to invest, and stocks have surged by 80% in dollar terms over the past 5 years. I'll take a step back and say, why is that? Well, think about share buybacks in companies. Why are shares elevated in companies when there are buyback programs? It's because you have more demand. People can give you all sorts of nifty ways to try and predict why equities are rising, why equities are falling. But the core of it is flows. And so when you have more flows, you have more money on the demand side. And that is what is pushing Indian equities higher. Now, mutual funds are more popular than ever. The number of mutual fund accounts tripling since 2021. And those digitalization accounts, it's called a DMAT account, it's a digital format for holding shares. They've increased by over 50% since last year. But with that being said, there are some growing risks. Indian stocks are now, what? They're now expensive. Their price-to-earnings ratio, twice the average of other emerging markets. And nearly 90% of retail derivatives traders are losing money. Regulators are tightening rules to protect new investors, raising the margin requirements for options and futures to minimize potential losses. And that kind of mimics what we see in our options market, right? Think about 50% of the trade volume is now 0-day to expire options. That's gambling. It's not investing. The IPO boom has kept optimism pretty high. But when optimism is high, asset prices are high, that's kind of indicative of what may be a bubble. Foreign investors, they sold a record $11 billion in October alone, and many veteran shareholders are cashing out. And so while the wave of new investors highlights the vibrancy of India's market and its access, the risks still remain high as well for those who are new to the game, who are less educated, who are less experienced within the market. And so this is an important aspect to it, right? India is going to have a more prevalent role should there be trade tensions with a historically large trading partner that is China. And as we move away from having supply chains in areas of the world where there could be tensions. And so all eyes are on the Indian market as it starts to develop even further. We have time for one more question, so let's play it now.
First of all, love the podcast. My name is Andy from Long Island. And I was wondering if you had any insight as to why the government put such a low contribution limit on simple IRAs at $17,000 a year or $13,500 for someone under 50 years old, as opposed to a 401k, 403b, and so on. I'll be listening. Thank you.
Yeah, that is a good question. And there's a couple reasons. One is the limits exist broadly because you're getting a tax benefit, right? And there is a limit to which the government wants to limit its tax revenue such that you don't have all of this revenue safe in these tax-advantaged accounts. Another reason is they want to incentivize the use of 401k plans. Why? Well, 401k plans honestly have more structure and protection. They have fund options for unsophisticated investors. They have requirements of the plan sponsors. And they have more administrative oversight, right? They tend to be a more, it tends to incentivize investors who are trying to save using accounts that have more, let's say, guardrails, given how important it is to save for retirement. And so that's why the government would typically prefer to steer savings into accounts that are more regulated, are safer for the everyday retail investor. My name is Luke Guerrero, and this completes another Invest Talk program. We thank you for listening, and we encourage you to tell your friends and family members about our free podcast downloads. Get yours anytime at iTunes, Google Play, and Spotify, and please be sure to leave us a rate and review. That really helps us out. Remember, you can better understand your portfolio dynamics and calculate your investor risk number. Just go to investtalk.com and click the portfolio review button. Once again, this is free and confidential, and we look forward to hearing from you. Independent thinking, shared success. This is Invest Talk. Good night.
Invest Talk is a trademark of KPP Financial. Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for the listener to understand that not all comments made will apply to them. Specifically, nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell security. Because such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor firm which retains all rights. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. Thank you for listening, and your comments and questions are welcome on our 24-hour listener line at 888-99-CHART.